geared towards kids at risk, vulnerable to addiction, crime, abuse, and family crisis. At this moment, there are 243 children and youth waiting for a KidStart volunteer. To volunteer, or for more information regarding the KidStart Mentoring Program or PLEA Community Services, please visit our websites, www.plea.ca and www.kidstart.ca.
Hullabaloo. Oh, I just love those kids.
I rather prefer the peacock.
The peacock.
Hey, now, wait a minute. Don't touch it. What's on next on this channel?
Nothing.
No. Don't be absurd. It's too early to go off the air. Color. That was the week that was satire.
That's what I said. Nothing.
Oh, don't be silly. That's wonderful. It's the funny side of the news.
Oh, big jokes about South Vietnam. Very funny.
No. It's about the president fooling around with his dog and walking with people on the White House lawn. You know, politics.
I'm switching to Peyton Place.
No, I can't look at that.
Why not? Honey, it's about real people. People like you and me.
Don't ever say that again.
Well, let's see what the opposition... here's something. Petticoat Junction. Now, the cannonball temporarily has to cease operations. A bird has established a nest in the train smokestack. Now, that's got to be funny.
I've yet to see a funny bird.
Oh. Honey, TW3, I know about this show. It's bad taste. It's vulgar.
How can you say that?
Didn't you ever notice how fast they talk and they're smiling all the time? They're getting away with something on that show.
They're brilliant.
Brilliant?
Mm-hmm.
They're pompous. They think they know it all.
No, well, they must. I don't understand 95% of it.
But who are they? I've never heard of them. Look, David Frost.
Oh,
I mean,
he's imported from London.
Well, you'd think they'd send him to someone, a distinguished statesman or something,
uh-huh.
You know, like Lord Hume.
You know something?
What?
I think he is Lord Hume.
He's funny enough to be Lord Hume.
Buck Henry.
Oh,
he's darling. The little one with the glasses.
Oh, the Japanese. Yeah, he's... Bob Dishy?
Uh-huh.
Sounds like a detergent.
It's Bob Dishay.
Oh, a French detergent. I see. At Pat England.
Uh-huh. She's on the show, too.
Oh, uh-huh. And, let's see. Love Lady Powell?
Oh, well, that's the sponsor. Some kind of new face powder.
Oh, a cosmetic. Uh-huh. I see. Nancy Ames.
Oh, well, that's the sad part of the show.
Oh, she's the one with the,
Yeah, all the long hair.
Oh. What's wrong with long hair?
Well, it puts a terrible strain on the brain. Oh, she has that funny style she's developed because of it. You know, staring and shouting. It's because she doesn't understand a word she's saying.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's watch Nancy Ames.
So
I mean, TWX3. Let's...
For real.
In North Vietnam, a jet was there. But in the South, things were up in the air from a coup or two. So what else is new? Well, Ranger 8 photographed the moon, and pictures from the spot where it was aimed prove the Sea of Tranquility was aptly named. No waves or foam, or Yankee go home. Shine on. Shine on harvest moon, but don't you see, spacemen will be standing on landing sites, demanding sites, and never agree. And then you'll have our earthly brand of lunacy. So shine on, shine on harvest moon for me and the world that weakly continues bleakly. Our embassy man was told by Syria, you're spying to see why our army's inferior. Rusk is waiting to see what curve he'll be thrown by Minister Curve de Merville, General cons, an envoy that doesn't know which ambassador to overthrow. The London Stock Exchange elite paid half a pound for the Beatle Beat. The UN wasn't very calm when Albania dropped its political bomb and demanded a vote on who should pay. But most of the others hastened to say, don't call for a vote, just call it a day. And that was the week that was.
Live from New York, that was the week that was. Brought to you by Helene Curtis, makers of new Enden Dandruff Shampoo. Tipperillo, the modern smoke by Robert Burns, found at all the right places with all the right people. And by new McLean's toothpaste, gets teeth irresistibly white.
Prediction for 1964. June the 25th. Liz Taylor free to marry at last. I shall let her go, says Richard Burton. A spokesman for the Republicans said today, with the candidacy of Senator Barry Goldwater, the Republican Party is on the way back. And who knows, one day it may even go forwards.
You're a grand old flag, you're a high-flying flag, but it seems that wherever you hang, you're becoming more a target for a whimper that ends with a bang. Then we send a note that the president wrote, but whenever the point is made, should old acquaintance be forgot, we just send them more foreign aid.
This week, Lester Kirkendall, an Oregon State College professor, told a session of the National Education Convention that college boys and girls have far more sexual experience today than they did 10 years ago. Anxious to learn how far this sexual revolution has gone, TW3 dispatched its reporter to interview an average college student.
Hello there. I wonder if you'd mind answering a few personal questions.
Well, I guess not.
It's about your sexual practices.
Oh, I thought you meant something personal.
I understand that many college students feel that premarital sex is all right.
All right, it's practically perfect.
I know. I mean, how do you feel about sexual relations before the wedding?
I think it's wrong if it delays the ceremony.
I see, yes. But have you ever considered the moral consequences?
No. No, actually, sex is the last thing I think about. Helps me sleep.
Yes, I see. Sociologists tell us that the availability of efficient birth control devices makes college girls more promiscuous. What do you feel makes college girls promiscuous?
Well, I've had very good results with a Mantovani album.
Yes, I see.
You know, now, a glass of wine, a little Swinburne.
All right, all right. Tell me, if you will, do your teachers try to help you with this problem?
Oh, sure. Last week the dean called me in and warned me about cases of promiscuity on the campus.
Did it help you?
Yes, sir. I got 3 good leads. Is that all?
A class?
Yes, sir. Lots of class.
Just one more question, please. Do you feel that college students are given too much freedom in sexual matters?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I agree with the man who said the aim of life is self-development.
That's wild, isn't it?
It sure is.
It's been a most illuminating week in American politics this week. Senator Goldwater has been addressing himself to the great issues of the day and explaining where he stands, aside. What indeed are the principles of Goldwater's new style conservatism? Well, he's in favor of the United Nations in principle, but against it in practice. He's in favor of foreign aid in principle, but against it in practice. And of course, everybody's against the H-bomb in principle, but he's in favor of it in practice. Nelson Rockefeller, of course, says, why should a man be prevented from becoming president simply because he's a divorcee? Senator Margaret Chase Smith says, Why should a man be prevented from becoming president simply because he's a woman? And Richard Nixon says, why should a man be prevented from becoming president simply because he's Richard Nixon? Even so, the Republican Party could well settle for him in the end. He is, after all, the only candidate with experience in the one area where the polls show the Republican nominee is going to need it. Defeat. But what of the Democrats? Things are not going to be all smooth sailing for Lyndon Johnson. Teenagers continue to cause social upheavals. Television is concerned mainly with the advertiser. Big business commands exorbitant profits. And things are even worse outside his family.
On Tuesday, the last major primary of 1964 passed into history. And now all eyes are fixed firmly on the San Francisco Cow Palace, where the Republicans will hold their national convention on July 10th. TW3 presents now its coming attractions of a grand show for the whole family.
Coming soon, Showdown at the Cow Palace. The startling story of four men and a woman who rode west in search of power.
There was Rocky. He held the key to power, but gambled it all on one mad love affair.
There was Dick, driven shrieking and sobbing from town. He returned to wipe out his humiliation.
There was Scranton Bill, the quiet man who rode his dark horse through the quiet streets, murmuring, I want to feel wanted.
There was Cabot, torn by a cruel decision. Should he come to San Francisco and give up a good $6,000 a year job?
And there was the woman, Maggie.
See? Thousands of screaming delegates grabbed for the bandwagon.
Sing! Dwight Eisenhower sing the movie's hit song, That Big Driving Range in the Sky.
And see!
The most terrifying scene in motion picture history. The invasion of the Goldwater, the Goldwater, the Goldwater, the Goldwater. Thrill to the repeal of Social Security. Weep at the sale of TVA. Cringe at the destruction of the UN.
Showdown at the Cow Palace. A Goldwater production in association with 18th Century Fox.
This week, America's civil defense organization was downgraded by the president. It was dropped down a notch in the governmental hierarchy from the Department of Defense to the Department of the Army.
TW3 feels this is a serious mistake. Our civil defense establishment can play an important role in our nation's military posture. With us tonight is a man who has had abundant first-hand experience in the crucial area of civil defense.
Years ago, when I was still married, I had a bad marriage. Let me begin this at the very beginning. My wife and I thought that we were in love, but it turned out to be benign. It was a rough marriage. I had married, actually, one of the few white Muslims in New York. And we didn't get along, and we joined on Lexington Avenue in New York. There's a civil defense group where you meet a couple of times a week, and they coach you on civil defense. And in the event of a hydrogen bombing or something, they issue you a flashlight. And you can hold it up, you know, and it's mostly social. We used to have cocktails a couple of times, you know, and once a week we'd play a softball game against the pacifists. And at that time, Rockefeller wanted a couple to test out his air raid shelter program. They wanted to see if a married couple could live in a confined area 20 by 20 feet for 2 weeks without trouble. And my wife volunteered us for it. I was not working at the time. I had been fired when I was thrown out of college. And when I was thrown out, I got a job on Madison Avenue in a real dyed-in-the-wool advertising agency wanted a man to come in and to pay him $95 a week and to sit in their office and to look Jewish. I wanted to prove to the outside world that they would hire minority groups, you know. So I was the one that they hired there. I was the show Jew with the agency. I tried to look Jewish desperately, you know. I used to read my memos from right to left all the time. They finally fired me because I took off too many Jewish holidays. We did this. We entered the air raid shelter on Monday morning at 11:30. We went in, my wife and me. They shut the door. We sat there and we faced each other. And we chatted. And we read. And we ate three very nice meals. By then already it was noon. She was beginning to get on my nerves. Tuesday, we spent most of our time just standing in the center of the room shrieking. Wednesday, we played gin rummy, and she came at me with an axe. And Thursday, my wife's spirits began to lift perceptibly. She woke up Thursday morning. She was smiling. She was laughing. She laughed straight through till the following Wednesday. She woke up on the next Thursday, and she said to me, "Does the king suspect?" I left the shelter. She's still there. It's been 4 years. You can write to her if you want to.
This week, Malcolm X broke with Elijah Muhammad's black Muslim movement and announced he was organizing a politically oriented black nationalist party.
The revolution for Negro rights in America, like every great moral issue, has spanned extremist groups on both sides. On one side are the black Muslims, on the other, the White Citizens Council. We'd like you to hear some actual quotations from these diametrically opposed groups.
The evolutionary lead of the white man over the Negro is 200,000 years. The black man was the original man. Our only salvation lies in economic and political action. Political and economic activity is the answer. The moderates are chickens. The liberals are fools. We are against violence. We will not attack anyone. Unless all else fails. Unless we are attacked. We are against integration. Integration is not the answer. We are for segregation. We are for separation.
Curious, isn't it? How the extremes seem to echo one another. Well, the force of history seems to be in the direction of integration. Of course, there may be a way in which these two groups might accomplish their aims. Why don't they integrate? This week, the Ku Klux Klan announced its plan to set up private, segregated towns for Klansmen and their families.
In addition, the Klan announced it's trying hard to improve its image. At recent Klan meetings, members have been turned away because they've failed to wear jackets and ties, or because they had alcohol on their breath.
Well, it's happened. The Klan has finally gone Ivy League. Perhaps someday an American dramatist will write a folksy little play about one of the Ivy League towns of the Ku Klux Klan.
Doesn't the Kleagle look regal, dressed in white tie and tails? Oh, it fills our hearts with calm to know the hand that throws the bomb will be a hand with clean fingernails.
Doesn't Miss Gretchen look fetching, sequins and chiffon strips? Just to show you what finesse is, she not only makes her dresses, but she also made the horsehide whips.
The Jackson Sentinel was down on us, used to frown on us as abnormal.
But their fashion columns put the fashion crown on us, since our lynchings now are strictly formal.
There's the Grand Dragon, still bragging, not a drink since March 19.
Why, in fact, he's vitriolic, over liquids alcoholic, but I hope he brought the kerosene.
Out, Mr. Shelburne, you'll give us a black eye. Though we know you make the matches at your factory in Natchez, you simply must wear a tie. And besides, as you can see, this affair's RSC.
I'm so glad we said those ugly uniforms must go. So unchic, you know, just to keep on.
Why, I never realized until a week ago that sheets are also nice to sleep on.
Since we're dressy and decked out, eject out any crude, unkempt rogue. Our affairs, life, and look are spurning, but the thought just keeps returning that our very next cross burning will be photographed by Vogue.
TW3 presents its presidential non-preference poll.
2 weeks ago, we honored Barry Goldwater, star of That Was the Century That Was. Last week, we paid tribute to LBJ, Lightbulb Johnson, or, as he is known to his intimate friends, Mr. President.
This week, we would like to honor a man of imagination and intellect. Instead, we've chosen Governor George Wallace of Alabama. Here is what some of our viewers had to say about the Dixie ambassador of ill will.
Mrs. Mickey Magnuson of Daly City, California writes, I'm afraid that if Wallace ever got the upper hand in America and subjugated the Negro, he'd start in on us people with freckles.
Mr. Ted Zellman of Miami writes, I suspect the only time George Wallace spent in school, he was blocking the doorway.
Mr. Emmanuel Lertzman of Brooklyn writes, the time has come, excuse me, the time has come, the Wallace said, to speak of many things, of schools and segregation and Martin Luther King's. Yet why create a furor here when there's so little solace in living with the stress and strains of Deutschland über Wallace?
Miss Janice McMillan, age 11, of Rochester, New York, writes, I would least like Governor Wallace as my president. I think it's pretty childish to feel superior to someone because their skin is a different color.
Well, Janice, age 11, think kindly of Governor Wallace. He has nothing against the American Negro. No doubt he thinks every man should own one.
Just because a person's complexion is tan, tan as the sands upon the shore, doesn't mean that he is a much better man, or that someone up there likes him more.
Red, green, blue, or white, nothing but reflected light, just a nerve impression on the mind. The Lord is colorblind, colorblind. Just because a person's complexion is black, black as the night behind the star, doesn't mean he's got to be on the right track, or that he is better than we are.
Red, green, blue, or white, nothing but reflected light, just a nerve impression on the mind. The Lord is colorblind, colorblind.
Is lighter, lighter than his neighbors east or west, doesn't make his ways any better or righter, or prove he is worse than all the rest.
Well, red, green, blue, or white, nothing but reflected light, just a nerve impression on the mind. The Lord is colorblind, colorblind.
Because a person's complexion is yellow, yellow as the grapefruit on the tree, doesn't mean that he much finer fellow, born superior to you and me.
Red, green, blue, or white, nothing but reflected light, just a nerve impression on the mind. The Lord is colorblind, colorblind.
Red, green, blue, or white,
colorblind,
nothing but reflected light,
colorblind.
Nikita Khrushchev said today that he's been photographing the United States from one of his satellites in outer space. Oh, Nikita, you too.
Since those remarkable birds moved into the White House, no pastime has been more popular along the Potomac than bird watching. The birds in Washington, in fact, have multiplied to the point where a whole flight of them will be winging to the Democratic Convention in Atlantic City.
The indefensible secretary bird, known as the McNamara's Edsel. This bird lays all its eggs in a missile basket, leaving no ground defense against the red birds. Has a loud cry of,
Vietnam okay, Vietnam okay, Vietnam okay.
The Bat Bay Bobby Bird tries to fly with the Linden Bird, has sharp pleading cry of,
Veep, veep, veep.
The white-breasted Wallace Bird flies far from home to raid the nests of northern birds, may be identified by his unnerving shriek,
Not my sister, not my sister, not my sister.
The hovering Humphrey Bird, sometimes called the left-handed whip bird. Its cry sounds like,
Need a quorum, need a quorum, need a quorum.
The Humphrey Bird, incidentally, is distinguished by a single bill.
The bumbling Maya Wagner Bird has dull gray plumage. When in danger, he responds with a fearful cry,
Rocky did it, Rocky did it, Rocky did it.
And lastly, the lordly Linden Bird, commonly known as the Texas Roadrunner, prefers to nest in darkened houses, deceives enemies with the cry of,
Economy! Economy! Economy!
And when in distress, issues the plaintive call,
Bobby who? Bobby who? Bobby who?
Dear TW3, I live in the state of Virginia. I'm a little schoolgirl, age 16, with the average 12-year-old mind. Because 4 years ago, they suddenly closed the school I was attending. My daddy said it was because they were trying to make us go to the school with Negro children. But now my daddy says the Supreme Court is going to enforce a clause to make the state of Virginia open up all the schools they closed. Is there such a clause?
Yes, Virginia, there is a constitutional clause.
In Vietnam this week, a new coup d'etat, the latest in a series of government crises. To review the troubles that have beset South Vietnam in a little over a year, here is our Southeast Asian expert.
Trouble here began in November 63 with the overthrow of the Diem regime. Madam Nu left the country and the regime was ousted by the military in a coup. Madam Nu has since gone on to become a Miss Universe loser. Power was then in the hands of Major General Duong Van Minh. But in January 64, Major General Nguyen Khan led a bloodless coup which made him premier but still impossible to pronounce. In March 64, after threats, Khan stepped down and Nguyen Xuan Oanh was made acting premier. In September, a bloodless coup installed Tran Van Hoang as premier, replacing Khan and giving rise to the saying, Khan today, Hoang tomorrow. In December, the young Turks of the army staged a demi-coup against civilian rule, and Hoang brought four military leaders into his cabinet. Then this week, another coup, the fifth, deposed Hoang and put Khan back as premier. Khan's first public statement was that Vietnam has had its final coup. It would be a pity if the South Vietnamese stopped now. They're just getting good at it.
The American Book Council announced this week that 1963's best-selling paperback was the 90-cent edition of Fanny Hill. Critics feel that not since Manhattan Island was sold for $24 has so little money been able to buy so much dirt.
Ethical standards are collapsing all over the world. The mayor of New York wants to legalize off-track betting. In Japan, abortions are openly permitted. And this week, the final step toward moral chaos. Casey Stengel wants to legalize the spitball.
LBJ says our land will be the promised land of the truly free. Well, we go for his theme and the dream in his eye. He makes it all seem just as easy as pie. Though doubters may scream that it's pie in the sky. Well, that was the week that won.
Is Jerry Damon. Tomorrow night, see The Virginian, followed by Steve McQueen, Bobby Darin, Fess Parker, and Nick Adams in Hell is for Heroes. On Wednesday night at the movies at 9, 8 Central Time on NBC. Now stay tuned as Raymond Massey narrates an NBC News special on The Captain, Chronicle of Freedom. Next on NBC.